Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we do the news. First, we talk to Patrick Rosenstiel. He's an expert on the popular vote versus the Electoral College. And so we really drilled down on that. So listen up and share it, because people want to know which is the better modality. Well, we're going to answer those questions. All right. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Even basic information, names, emails, addresses, phone numbers have value on the black market. Cyber criminals use it to gain access to more sensitive information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our information out and we risk it on the internet. You could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they will send you an alert. If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help restore your identity easier than you could on your own. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No, we prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
You guys have talked on the show about Google me right. Well, my wife has a version of that called Google her husband wrong. Anytime I drop some knowledge on her, like you don't catch a cold from being cold, or sex helps with your immune system, she immediately tries to Google me wrong.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Patrick Rosenstiel is our guest. The campaign, National Popular Vote Advocacy Group, lobbying state legislatures to enter into an interstate compact, agreeing to send their electoral votes to the winner of the most ballots cast. So good to see you, Patrick.
Yeah, grateful for the opportunity to be here.
What's your background?
Yeah, well, I grew up in American politics, sort of on the campaign side of things as a young man. So I'll just disclose right now, I happen to be a Republican who supports the national popular vote for president. But I started by realigning Congress with guys like Gingrich, and then, been around the American presidency a little bit, ran some statewide campaigns in California. So I know a little bit about politics from the campaign side, and about policy from helping American presidents enact their domestic policy agendas. So that's sort of my relevant background here.
Am I right to assume that you're kind of an outlier? I thought most Republicans were electoral college people and the popular vote was more of a Democratic thing. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know. I think that's a misnomer. I mean, I've been involved in this movement since 2007. And from the very beginning, we've been a nonpartisan group of Republicans, Democrats, and independents who simply believe that every American voter ought to be relevant when we elect the president of the United States. The chairman of my organization is a progressive Democrat. We don't agree on a lot of things, but we do believe that, you know, a Republican trapped behind the blue wall in Minnesota should be relevant in presidential elections, as should a Democrat in Oklahoma. And under the current system, we're all ignored. So we want to change that system. And we've been doing that in a bipartisan fashion since 2006.
So it's not. But is it a true statement that more Republicans are for the electoral college, or am I just I just felt like I'm taking crazy pills. I felt like, or is it just split down the middle?
Well, I think, it used to be kind of split down the middle. Obviously, the last divergent election, there was a Republican candidate that won the presidency. So there have been some headwinds on the Republican
right.
side
right.
sort of recently. But I would just point out our bill, right? We're a state bill. And when enough states with 270 or more electoral votes pass our bill, they award those electors in block to the winner of the national popular vote. And that's the right way to move to a national popular vote for president. Last time my bill was introduced in Michigan, it had 15 Republican sponsors and 10 Democratic sponsors. So, we're just a movement where we think everybody should set down their jerseys. We should be electing the president of the United States, because every voter in every state should be politically relevant. And we believe that the principle of one person, one vote is foundational to American democracy. And I don't believe that's a Republican or a Democrat idea.
It's just
a good American idea.
Brian.
Yeah. Question for you, just point of clarification. Under your idea, your plan, and I could be wrong about this, but is it a winner take all based on the popular vote? Like a popular vote winner would then de facto win all of the electoral votes. It'd be made moot in a sense.
Yeah, every state that passes our bill, once we hit 270 electoral votes, all of those electors go in block to the winner of the national popular vote. So we'll guarantee the presidency to the winner every time, right, of the national popular vote. And we have 16 states that have passed our bill, 196 electoral votes. We're only trying to add 74 more. And I'm cautiously optimistic or beyond optimistic that this will be the last time we elect American president when 4 out of 5 voters in 4 out of 5 states are politically ignored, right?
Was the Electoral College necessary at some point in this country's history?
Well, the Electoral College was necessary, I think, to get out of the Constitutional Convention. But my real problem, the villain here isn't necessarily the Electoral College. It's the state-based winner-take-all law that the states adopted over time that's led to this sort of system of red states and blue states, right? I think the biggest misnomer about a national popular vote for president is that you can't have one with the Electoral College, right? Mm-hmm. If you open up the Constitution and read Article 2, Section 1, it says each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. So if you want a national popular vote for president, you don't need to abolish the Electoral College. You simply need to petition the state legislatures to award their electors on the basis of the popular vote.
And obviously, I live in California. We're basically a Democratic supermajority here. So the presidents don't bother swinging by and wasting a lot of energy over here.
Unless they got to pick up money.
They come by and pick up money, and then they go somewhere else and spend it. So we get short shrift over. I mean, imagine the size of the state of California and the populace in California, and it's kind of a neither here nor there thing when it comes to the presidential election. And so I guess that would change that, because you would have to focus a lot of time on California by virtue of the fact that there's, I don't know, 30, 40 million people in this state.
Well, 12% of the country lives in California, and it's completely ignored in presidential elections because of the state-based winner-take-all law. Under a national popular vote, you obviously would not ignore California. But California is not unique, right? South Dakota is a small red state, or a conservative state, is completely ignored in presidential elections. And we just think, you know, whether you live in Bismarck, North Dakota, or Sacramento or the Central Valley of California, you should be every bit as relevant to the American president and the candidates who seek the presidency as a voter in Boca Raton, Florida. And that's what a national popular vote will deliver.
Gina.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here to talk about this. I've been asking this question since high school, which for me was almost, 4 years ago. But I'm wondering what the argument is to keep it. What you're saying makes perfect sense. I've been asking the question my entire life. I've never gotten a good answer. What are the pro-electoral college people saying to keep this around? Because it's never made sense.
Oh, yeah, hold on. Sorry. I'm sorry for jumping in, but I think it's a good opportunity for you to respond to some of these clips. So sorry for derailing your shit, Gina, but just it'll all come around in 10 seconds. There's a PragerU video that had millions of views, and it was a short video on why we need the Electoral College. So I told Chris to send it to Patrick, and then I told Chris to whack up 3 or 4 talking points. And then I think the clearest way we can do this is we'll have that person from the video explain why we need it, and then Patrick can address it.
Great.
I think that makes the most sense. So the first one is...
Yeah, and this is Tara Ross. She is an expert on the Electoral College and a big defender of it. So the first one, she's going to talk about why it's important for democracy and how not having a full democracy is a good idea.
Why did they create, and why do we continue to need this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of the country.
All right, so we'll start with that one, Patrick.
Yeah, well, just to answer Gina's question real quick, because I got a confession to make, which is I can't think of a single redeeming quality to the current system, which is why I'm a proponent for national popular vote. But to Tara's point, people throw around words like democracy and republic without any real understanding of what they mean. And when she talks about the founders were afraid of democracy, she was talking about the founders were talking about Athenian democracy, right, where we would all vote on issues like the entire country would be run on a California initiative and referendum type process where voters and citizens would vote on every issue. Well, the founders weren't afraid of the people and they weren't afraid of a democratic republican form of government, which means we elect people to represent our interests, right? So Madison, for example, the father of the Constitution, wrote that a republican form of government is a body of government that derives its power from the people. And in a republic, we elect people to represent us for set terms. In this case, the president for 4 years. Okay? Democracy doesn't have any idea. It doesn't have anything to do with how you elect that person. Right. Under a national popular vote, we will be a Republican form of government because we will elect a president of the United States, not just a president of the battleground states. And every voter in every state will be valued in that process. And a national popular vote for president is absolutely consistent with Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, if enough states say that it is. So this idea that the founders didn't want a democracy. Indeed, they didn't want Athenian democracy, but they did want a body of government that derives its power from the people who elect them. And what better way to do that than through a national popular vote for president? We don't need to be electing a governor of the battleground state of Pennsylvania when we're electing a president of the United States. California ought not be ignored. Oklahoma ought not be ignored. Idaho ought not be ignored. Texas ought not be ignored. Every American voter should have an equal voice and sort of the benefit of that one person, one vote principle. And so I would call, well, I guess I won't call anything on Tara Ross, but that would be my right. That'd be my response.
Well, that's why we had you on. By the way, just a sort of side note, any thoughts about the upcoming election? Obviously, Trump's not going to win any popular votes. He won't win anything that has the word popular at the beginning of it, but that includes dance crazes and music. But
pretty hot on TikTok right now with his dancing.
There may be some road to the Electoral College, which of course would be a nightmare for you, I guess.
I don't make predictions on campaigns. I try not to be a pundit that way. I'm prepared for any result in that election.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting that the president could or could not win the popular vote this time around. I certainly believe in 2016, had we had a campaign where both campaigns were forced to campaign in all 50 states, like a national popular vote would do, I'm not sure that Hillary Clinton would have won the popular vote by 3 million votes. Because you got to remember, under the current system, 98% of the money you use to run for president is spent in just 12 battleground states, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if the president's campaigning vigorously in all 50 states in the District of Columbia, I don't know what would have changed, but I certainly know the outcome would have changed in the popular vote.
Brian, I got a few more of these clips through, but if you have a question, you can toss it.
No, finish the clips. I do have a question I want to ask, but finish the clips.
Number two clip was building a coalition. You can address this one.
Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, A candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think?
Okay, Patrick, how say you?
Those 12 states that she pulled up at the end there, those 12 big states that could control a national popular vote, the dirty little secret is under the current system, those same 12 states, if one candidate won those states by one popular vote, they'd be elected president because they have 270 electoral votes. When my friend Tara Ross talks about how the current system forces you to build vast coalitions across the country, it leads me to believe she has zero experience in electing a president of the United States. You're watching the campaign right now. It is 1 week from Election Day, and 35 states have not had an event during the general election from either of the major party candidates for president or vice president. They're being completely ignored. $1 billion that was leveraged on television 2 weeks ago, according to NPR, was spent in just 12 states. That means 38 states were completely ignored. Now, if she talks about building coalitions like this entire presidential election coming down to fracking policy, because that's important in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, I guess I'll agree with her. But the truth is presidential elections should be about what's in the best interest of all the American people, not just persuadable audiences inside the battleground state of Pennsylvania or Florida. So, you know, I think, first of all, I don't know if she read it in a political science book or like a PhD paper, but what matters in presidential campaigns is influence with the president. Right now, the battleground states have all the influence. The rest of us are mere spectators. And what that translates into every 4 years is preferred policy by the parties to pander to the political interests of battleground state Floridas. And we need to stop that, or battleground state voters.
Right.
I say Florida because that is the battleground state.
Yeah.
Or swing state in the election. So,
yeah, it's a good, it's a good point.
Another one that if I'm fact checking it, I'm almost laughing at it.
I think you just did. Brian, your question?
Oh, yeah. Patrick, you and I are very close on this. I've long had these thoughts. And we're, if your initiative were to not come to fruition, what do you think of this? And please clear your mind, by all means, poke holes in it. I've thought about this a lot, but I want to hear what the problems of this would be. Why not award an electoral vote per district? You know what I mean? There's 55 electoral votes in California. Why not award those individually? I obviously, if Donald Trump were to come and campaign in Orange County, that would be a good thing for him. And if the blue candidate was coming, campaigned in Marin County, that'd be a good thing for them. It could go 30-25. It could go, 35-20. But that would be a more egalitarian way to award electoral votes, would it not?
Well, Brian, I'm going to say this respectfully. I think it would take a bad system and make it worse, and I'll tell you why.
Please.
I mean, you're right to point out that Maine and Nebraska, right? They do it by congressional district right now. And it just goes to show you that the state-based winner-take-all law, which was never discussed at the Constitutional Convention, is not in the Constitution. States can change their method of awarding electors, and I prefer that they award them on the basis of the popular vote when it's decisive. Now, the reason I'm suspect of a congressional district plan is because I'm worried about sort of the influence of the battleground voter, right? So, for example, Maine's second congressional district today, Donald Trump is targeting that congressional district in Maine to get one electoral vote. And what is he doing? He's taking stances as an American president on protecting the interest of Maine lobster farmers. Now, I don't know what percentage of the American population Maine lobster farmers represent, but
less
it's not
than,
very
less
big.
Than 30%.
Yeah, well, it's less than 0.3%.
Hey, Patrick, I said less.
Yeah, but
you're on the same page.
Good point. But the truth is if you split up the country into competitive congressional districts, you're right to point out Orange County. In my home state of Minnesota, I'd probably point to the first congressional district where the Mayo Clinic is, but the rest of my state would be completely ignored, right? Mm-hmm. And so the truth is what you do is you concentrate the power in less hands in a congressional district system. The other thing is you can't wave a magic wand and do that, right? Because each state has to act independently,
sure.
Right? And so, the truth is in California, you'd have a problem going to that plan. You know why? Because the Democrats in Sacramento would not want to give the Republicans 12 right. electoral votes.
The irony is Sacramento is very conservative. Sacramento itself as a city.
Right. But the legislature, who would have to go to a congressional district plan, they're not going to unilaterally disarm. So my feeling is that the solution to pollution is dilution, right? Diluting the power of the battleground state voter is what we should all be focused on. The only way to do that is to have a national popular vote for president. The only way to have a national popular vote for president in place in 2024 is to pass the national popular vote bill in states with 74 more electoral votes. And the best way to do that is to join our effort at National Popular Vote. And if I can say a URL, just because I'm a pro, sure. nationalpopularvote.com.
nationalpopularvote.com. Well, I'll tell you, you've answered a lot of our questions, and it makes a lot more sense than it did to me before I started talking to you 25 minutes ago. So thanks for joining us, Patrick Rosensteel. That was informative.
Yeah, loved it. Enjoyed it. Love your show. Been a big fan of yours for a long time. So thanks for everything you do. And thanks for, you know, bringing a topic like this to your podcast. I mean, sometimes I feel like a political science professor, and that's a little boring. I probably need a hobby. But at the end of the day, I think this is worth doing, and I hope everybody will get involved.
Well, you do a real good job of representing your point. National Popular Vote, and again, nationalpopularvote.com is where you go. Patrick Rosensteel, thank you, my friend. All right, let me hit Red Cap here, and then we'll do some news with our own Bald and Gina Grad. Red Cap, that is Cap with a K, not with a C, with a K. Red Cap is one of the oldest makers of workwear in the country, outfitting our essential workforce for nearly a century. They have something for seemingly every industry, from coveralls to high visibility work shirts to oil blocking chef coats and shop shirts as well. We have the coveralls over here. They are top shelf, high quality. They're great. And they've been going at it since 1923. So I think they know what they're doing. And right now, you can go to Red Cap with a K, redcap.com. Enter the promo code Adam. Get 20% off your first order. This offer ends November 20th. So get in there. Get some top-tier industrial-grade workwear that's perfect for any job. That is redcap, with a K, .com, promo code Adam. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back with the news and Gina Grad.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Megyn Kelly, she's joined in on the roasting of our fearless governor, Gavin Newsom, here in California on Sunday for his very restrictive Thanksgiving guidelines, which we got into already, includes strongly discouraging singing at festivities, keep your woodwind instruments at home. We got all of this, I believe, yesterday. In a tweet posted Sunday, the former Fox News and NBC News host listed some of the rules and called them Thanksgiving insanity. Comedian, and this is all from Daily Mail, by the way, comedian and Saturday Night Live vet Rob Schneider took to Twitter earlier to insinuate that Newsom is trying to run California like a monarchy. He tweeted, "Dear Emperor Gavin Newsom, during our allotted three-family limit in Thanksgiving, if my aunt comes over, can I throw her a slice of turkey from the window? We promise not to sing. We will all just whisper, please recall dipshit Gavin Newsom." And again, from the Daily Mail, also reports that radio personality and actor Adam Carolla responded, yes, you made the Daily Mail article saying, tweeted, "How many of you sheep are going along with Newsom's Thanksgiving protocols?" And I buried the lead. You are a radio personality and an actor, first and second.
Yeah. At this point, you're going to have to assume that Gavin Newsom is either handicapped mentally, and there is something wrong with him. I mean, his thinking. I've heard him try to articulate his side of arguments, and there's something that doesn't really track with him. So there's either something going on a neurological level, or there's something nefarious going on. But either way, you get to do what you want for Thanksgiving. He's either stupid or liar. Like, I don't know what he's doing, but understand there's something wrong with Gavin Newsom. I was saying to Mike August today, I said, living in a state where Gavin Newsom's in charge, it's like you're being punished. It's like he's trying to punish us. Like,
he wants to run for president.
That's what Mike says every single time. And
it's,
I'm like,
retort.
All right, well, why does he have to punish us? Can't he just go run for president? So either way, people, or sheeple, depending on how you look at yourself, it's time for you to start living your life. And I think everyone is pretty aware of what the rules are, or what the do's and the don'ts are. I think we got it. We understand. Some are a little more compliant than others, but we understand what we're trying to avoid. And go out there and live your life accordingly, which, by the way, most people do. You kind of leave people alone. You give them the information for the most part, and you leave them alone. They tend to wear their mask, and they tend to distance, and they tend to do what's sort of the social contract.
I don't know if you saw what's been going on with this. It seems post-apocalyptic. You know, we all know that Disneyland shut down for the time being, possibly till next summer, and how that's affecting the people of Anaheim and Orange County. And there is now, I don't have the specifics in front of me, but there is now a food line for former and present Disneyland employees, because they are so broke and they are so out of work that there is now a food line, I think this weekend, where you can go and get food, a box of food, if you're a Disney employee. It seems post-apocalyptic.
Well, they're running Disney in Florida and it's working fine, and they haven't had any big flare-ups, and who better than Disney? You know, who better at herding people around than Disney? Who does a better job at moving people around? That's their job, is moving people around and lines and all that kind of stuff, and how to deal with that. So there's a bunch of guidelines. They follow it at Disney in Orlando, and 2 months later, no flare-ups, no news, no nothing. So good. The good news is they volunteered to be the canary in the coal mine. We were California. We were going to play it safe. Let those Floridians shake hands with the devil. So they did. When did they open the Disney in Florida?
Disney World.
So it's been a long enough time in terms of the gestation period and all that kind of stuff. No bad news that I'm aware of out of Disney Florida. So good news.
Well, and also, who among us who's been to Disneyland wouldn't be the first to sign up and say yes to 25% capacity? I mean, Disneyland is the worst slog.
Sounds like a dream.
Oh, that sounds like the best. And if I have to wait 3 months and, you know, or book a year in advance, I know my day is coming where there's going to be a quarter of the people in the park. Where do I sign?
Well, also, I'm very brass tacks with all this shit, which is, you don't have to go to Disneyland. If you're elderly or asthmatic or both, and you think there's some danger, don't go. Just don't go. If you're young and you have no pre-existing conditions, then maybe you should go. That's it. So they didn't have any big spike. They reopened in July. I don't know July what, but
we know by now.
I'm seeing 15th and 11th.
The middle of July, so it's been 4 months or whatever it's been. All right, good. They volunteered to be the canary in the coal mine, Gavin Newsom. They went and opened. They had protocols. They followed the protocols strictly, and it seemed to work. Good. Now we know it's safe for us to open, except for we won't, because we're California. And we have to send some sort of message. But I don't know what I'm not sure the message he's sending. He hates employees. He hates a tax base. He hates Disney, who brings billions of tax revenue to this city and state. What is the message? Nobody knows what the message is. I talk to the smartest and listen to some of the smartest people around, and no one can figure out what Newsom is doing, other than Mike August running for president. But I still don't understand why keeping Disneyland. I would be much more apt to vote for DeSantis in Florida, because he went okay, we got this situation, but we have to balance it against this massive employer shutting down in the tax dollars. So we're going to have to figure out, we're going to have to figure this out. Just saying shut it down, that we don't need a governor. I mean, that takes no skill politically. That's what you're looking for in leadership is a balance. The leadership, you know, it's like you're a general. You can't go, don't storm Normandy Beach. You have to go, we are storming Normandy Beach. Well, we have to figure out a way to do it strategically. We can't just go, don't get off the Higgins ship. That doesn't, you're not a good general by just going, don't open Disneyland. You're a good general by implementing procedures so that we can safely open Disneyland. That's
figuring a way how.
Yes, that's what you want in a leader. No, we're not doing it. Yes.
Yeah, and people are finally getting to the point. I'm seeing articles now that we've never seen before saying, you know, what price will we pay for, you know, the pandemic, which we've been talking about on this show, but it hasn't been a mainstream question that anyone's, and I'm starting to see that. And you think, well, Gavin Newsom, if you care about the people you represent, then, and I'll just come back to it, they're standing in a food line. I mean, they don't have enough money to buy food, so they're each getting a box of food. You think that makes you look good? That's talk about an optics issue.
I don't know. Maybe he's just a full-blown sociopath. Like, he doesn't seem to have nerve endings. He laughs when he shouldn't be laughing. He says things that don't track or make sense. His rebuttals are more actually hurt his case more than help his case. There's something.
Where are you going to go? I mean, Utah's nice.
I think it's genuinely hard to be a successful politician and not be a sociopath. I think that's a rare exception.
Yeah, I guess, but there's something particularly wrong with him. I don't know. I'm not that cynical. I don't think you have to be a sociopath. I think there's a lot of decent people out there, but he is amongst the worst. And yeah, the greatest thing about where the hell else you're going to go, the thing that made him a sociotard with that one is the person who was interviewing him said, well, what's that mean? I mean, people could go anywhere. And he went, I know. That's just something Jerry Brown says. So I don't know if I agree with it. Like, okay. All right. Well, you're just quoting people that you disagree with now.
Well, listen, 4 score and 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Traffic.
Yes. Yeah. I regret that I only have one life to give for my country. Or what? Or not. Doesn't matter to me.
I had a dream.
Yeah. I mean, he's a fucking idiot. And I have no idea. Everyone should just defy him. We should just reopen. Like, Disney should just fucking reopen and go sue us. What are you going to do?
There would be storming the gates. It's not like no one would show up.
Oh, my God. Yes. It's the same with eating indoors in a restaurant. But again, only people that felt safe enough to go into the restaurant or into the amusement park would go. If you do not feel it's safe, or you think it's a bad idea, or you're elderly or impaired, then you shall stay home. It seems logical. By the way, same with fucking school. My kids have been homeschooling and laying on their bed for 6 months. There's no danger in the schools. Jesus Christ, fucking teachers unions, fucking heroes you guys are. Jesus fucking Christ. It's insane that our schools aren't open. And by the way, it's horrible for kids to be home. And my kids are lucky. There's plenty of kids that are really suffering who need to get and go to school. But no, they shall suffer more. Okay. All right, Gavin Newsom. Jesus, he's such a fucking retard.
And
anyway.
We quote unquote, think this is normal because it's what we know here. But if you follow, if you have friends all over the country or enough people on Instagram, like, oh, you know, hashtag just another day at drop off, you know, they're in school, you know, plenty of people are living their lives, but we don't see it here.
What is so insanely unique about California that we can't open our schools when I see the CNN map every morning and we're beige in a sea of a lot of red and orange? We've been flat, at least according to CNN and their color-coded state thing. What is so uniquely dangerous about opening schools in California that somehow doesn't apply to other states?
I was thinking the exact same thing with the beige and the it seemed like 48 of the, 47 of the states are red or orange, and you know we're beige, which is kind of hard to believe. But counterpoint, tell me what you think of this. Is that not because of the restrictions we've been under for the last few months?
I don't know.
What other explanation could there be?
Well, see, this is an interesting thing because this thing seems to be just cycling through countries and states in many different forms. And if you really start drilling down on the data, there isn't a straight line between lock it down and affected. There are places that were less affected that had more freedoms. There are places that were locked down that had a lot of problems. There's flare-ups in places that were locked down but then reopened. There's much less rhyme and reason when you look at countries, especially around the world, and states to this thing. It doesn't seem to follow a straight standard. Well, the places that wore the masks and locked down, big picture. So I don't know. And every place seems to be different. I don't know what is different about California. It seems to all kind of be just, we're looking at the map now. It seems a lot of it just seems to be luck and happenstance. And we're trying to make sense of it. But a lot of the data suggests kind of flies in the face. And in Europe as well, like they're places that were religious with the lockdown and religious with the masking. I think Italy was one of them. And they're going through a bunch of flare-ups and stuff now. So I don't know that anyone really has their mind wrapped around it. Here's my take. We have therapeutics. We know how to treat people. This is not a killer. For kids, it's really not a killer. It's like 99.9% whatever. As a matter of fact, I think recently the data has come out that it's more dangerous. The flu is now more dangerous for kids than COVID-19. This is not a problem for kids. Fine. If you have an elderly home ec teacher, let Edna stay home. But we should reopen the schools. And we're starting to realize there's a big downside, a social downside, a financial downside, a depression downside, a substance abuse downside, a spousal abuse downside. And we're just going to – what I'm saying is this thing of like we're going to lock it down and we're going to eradicate it, it's not proving to work around the world. I think we have therapeutics. They're much better than they were and how – Of course, they would have to be. We didn't know what the fuck was going on in March. Now you have a much greater likelihood of, if you get it, if you are hospitalized, of making it through that experience. And we're just going to have to responsibly open up the schools, open up Disneyland, and rely on possible herd immunity, but also rely on the therapeutics.
Well, just to sort of put a bow on this topic so I don't have to get too deep into the next two stories. There are, to your point, one curfew fairly close to us and one starting a little farther away. Texas, they're going to have El Paso start having a curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Fucking libs.
That starts Sunday. Violators could be fined $500. They are having a surge, and they're afraid that they're going to be short a few hospital beds. Meanwhile, Spain is a real hot spot right now in Europe. Spanish government declared a national state of emergency. They're having a curfew from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. That starts Sunday. That's likely to be in place for 6 months. And of course, this doesn't include, you know, first responders or certain jobs or going out to, you know, buy medicine or take care of a family member. But in general, they're also afraid of the hospitals being totally overwhelmed again.
Yeah. I'm not worried about it. I've been hearing about hospitals being overwhelmed for a long fucking time, and I haven't seen it here.
Well, it did happen in Italy, right? So I think Spain is looking more to them than to us.
How many hospital overwhelmed warnings have we had in the last 6 months versus...
We had two battleships sent here.
Right.
Two hospital ships.
I've also now known a few people who got it, sort of civilians and stuff, and it just some fared better than others, but they're all fine. I mean, it just cycled, and now that I wouldn't have wanted to get this thing in March, but I think we know a lot more now. All right, Gina, let's do one more.
All right. Well, people have been weighing in for a while now on cancel culture and the problems with it, but it's refreshing to have, I guess, comedians, people like Sarah Silverman, now having the same conversation. She has a new podcast, and she talked about it, a recent podcast of hers, that victims of cancel culture deserve a, quote, path to redemption, and acknowledge all the problems with this progressive idea of canceling somebody's livelihood. She talked specifically about this longtime friend of hers that was kind of a neo-Nazi, and because he couldn't find love anywhere else, and warning the same thing could happen to people who are abandoned by the left. Here's a clip.
But without a path to redemption, when you take someone, you found a tweet they wrote 7 years ago or a thing that they said, and you expose it and you say, this person should be no more, banish them forever. They're going to find some place where they are accepted. And it's not going to be with progressives, which ironically means to be changed, progress. If we don't give these people a path to redemption, then they're going to go where they are accepted, which is the motherfucking dark side.
I don't know if I'm totally down with that theory, but I like the acceptance or the redemption part of it.
Well, I've said that a million times, that it's like, you know, say for, you know, where whoever you want to be an ally with, like, let me be your, why are you banishing me out? I'm your ally. I am supporting you, and I use the wrong word, and now you don't want me in your group. So if I go talk to the people who hate you, would that make you happier? Or should you accept that there's a wider, more flexible swath of allies and people who support your cause?
This is why people have to get into cars. Because
get into the hobby of cars.
Once you like cars, it's just like that's your group. You know what I mean? Yeah. You hang around with car guys, you go to Cars and Coffee, you go do a vintage race, you spend your online time looking on Bring a Trailer. You know what I mean? Like I look at people's tweets, but I don't spend any time on any political website or group websites. I do want to push back against this group thing. This is kind of a new thing. Like, everyone's got to join a group. And if you're thrown out of the progressive group, then you get into the neo-Nazi group. And if you're thrown out of the Nazi group, then you get into the Mexican lowrider group. Like, we're not in fucking prison. Does anyone feel like they're in a group? I mean, you have things you like. You have a team. You know, you went to a college, you root for that team, but is it weird to just, and it's a little condescending to think like everyone's getting into a group or needs to be? There's a lot of it out there, but how necessary is it? And why does everyone feel like, you know, like as if Antifa or the Proud Boys like represented any significant, or the neo-Nazis or the white Hitler youth or white Aryan nation.
You could just say Hitler youth.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah. As if they represent
multi-ethnic Hitler youth.
Any numbers, the KKK or, I don't know, the Black Panthers. Like, they don't represent any real numbers in this country. But we talk about them constantly. I have no idea how many people are in the KKK. It's got to be a very small number from a percentage standpoint in this country. Why are we so obsessed with the group and the group everyone's entering? Why not make your family your group? You know, make your friends your group. Have your hobbies. You know, you like cooking, or I like cars, or whatever, and you get a little community there. But I like what she's saying about not casting people out of the progressive group by judging them, and I appreciate that, but I don't feel it's like latchkey kids with gangs. You know, I don't feel like they're going to be a Crip or Blood. I just think they'll be pissed at your group and call you a hypocrite.
That would be the more toned down, likely version for sure. I don't want to put words in my mouth. I have no idea. It was all in all, it was a 3-minute clip, but But, you know, when you get that outlier that feels ousted, and then that's the one that, you know, drives into a protest or shoots up a school.
Tim McVeigh was part of a group.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
true.
They're groups. There are groups. Yes. But I don't feel like, I feel like we talk about them more than they actually affect us. I feel like there's more talk, like the Proud Boys or Antifa or something. It's like, what are we really talking about here?
Right.
I mean, we talk and talk and talk about how many can actually be in that group. And don't join a group. Yeah, of course there's groups and everyone's all, look, you know, the Manson family was a group. It was a group of, you know, 18 horrible people. It was a group, but that's fine. That's going to exist. Cults exist. Groups exist. Gangs exist. I just don't think, I think we're spending way too much time breaking down the game film. I think you get a hobby, you focus on your family, you get a life, you have a community, you have a team, and you get the fuck on with life. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, there is Geico. You want to save money on your auto insurance? You don't want to spend a whole bunch of time shopping around? Go to geico.com. Spend 15 minutes and find out just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance. 15% or more on car insurance just by spending a couple minutes at geico.com. That is geico.com. All right. Theoretically, the president of the United States on tomorrow.
Ooh,
we're working on that, but I think it's a go so far. So we got that to look forward to. I have a joke presentation for him. We shall see how that goes over.
He's going to fire you again.
So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla. Oh, for Patrick Steele.
Rosensteel.
I had a little misprint on here. Rosensteel, Gina Grant, Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Download the Stereo app to your phone to listen in live to the President and the Ace Man tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific. Again, download the Stereo app. And pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our All-Woke, No-Joke Culture. It's available everywhere. All the links are at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.